And we will move on to the second case for this morning, Say against City of Aurora.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Thomas Piskorski, and I'm appearing on behalf of the defendant appellant, City of Aurora. Medical attention received by an employee is not work time because it is necessarily and primarily for the employee's benefit. The Department of Labor has created and carved out an exception to this general rule, and that's in 785.43. In that regulation, the DOL specifically answers the question when medical attention time is supposed to be treated as work time.
But Mr. Piskorski, I would find it more helpful to focus on the part of the regulations that the district court focused on, which is 785.7, because 785.43 very clearly is not supposed to occupy the field in terms of discussion. The regulations make it clear that it's illustrative. But I want to get back to your what I think is your principal point, is whether this is primarily for the benefit of the employer or primarily for the benefit of the employee. In some ways, what you say makes intuitive sense, except it's a little odd to think that something is primarily for the employee's benefit when the employer is forcing her to go to a particular doctor at a particular time. That's where it begins to be look more like it really is for the employer's benefit.
And let me just add to that, and when she has a therapist, so this isn't a situation where she wouldn't have her own therapist and she's questioning, saying, you know, who could you send me to? I need some assistance. So I just wanted to add that.
Sure.
Because I'm concerned about the same thing.
I think that very fact that she was already seeing a psychologist, I think, underscores the point that the benefit was primarily directed to her.
Why doesn't it point in the exact opposite direction? She's getting her own benefit from her own psychologist, and it's the city who, according to the district judge, wants her to get extra skill sets in terms of dealing with what is obviously a very stressful position. I take it she was a 911 operator, basically.
Yes, Your Honor.
And, you know, that can be a very stressful position. And so the city says, we want to give you a better set of skills to deal with that. You can't go to your psychologist. You have to go to Dr. Nucci.
Well, I don't think it was intended to be a better set of skills. It was intended to address a personality situation that was at least affecting her both personally and on the job. The fact that she was already seeing a psychologist, in my mind, underscores the point that the treatment, the counseling she was receiving, was already benefiting her. All the city really did, if you come down to it, was switch the provider of the counseling and make the provider a requirement. The counseling already existed. I also think another undisputed fact that kind of goes to your point, Judge Wood, is that after the plaintiff left the employ of the city, she continued to receive the counseling from the same person the city set her up with. And I think that, too, underscores the point that the primary benefit of this goes to the employee. I'm not going to stand here and deny that there may not be some peripheral or tangential or some benefit to the employer. Probably is.
Well, here's what I was thinking in terms of just trying to think of what the benefit was to the city of Aurora. It seems from this record that the city of Aurora was shorthanded on 911 operators if the original incident that seems to have triggered all of this was because she'd already worked an 80-hour week and she needed to work another 8-hour shift. That's a lot of hours to ask somebody to work. So it strikes me that one could infer that they're shorthanded, that you need these people, and it was to the city's benefit to keep an employee who'd already been on 6.5 years or so, 6 years, whatever it was, and make sure she got whatever remedial attention she needed, as opposed to just saying, you know, we don't like, you know, you aren't working out on the job, go. So the city does get some benefit to reduce turnover.
I'm not denying that there is some benefit, but the question under the regulations, whichever one the court or whoever wants to look at, goes to the necessarily and primarily for the benefit of the employer. This is not, we could have not brought her back. We could have not required it. So, and primarily, she benefits by addressing a personality situation that existed before this, existed after this, and she's receiving benefit. Again,
suppose you had sent her off for computer training, and you had said you have to go, you know, to Oak Brook where the people we like to use are located, and she had the same hour drive to Oak Brook, an hour lesson, and an hour back. Now, she would obviously benefit from getting better computer skills. Would you say that's not covered either?
Your Honor, that situation, training, would be governed by an entirely different regulation, and there's a set of requirements. The factual pattern you've described under the training regulation probably would be treated as work time. But that's a different regulation.
Let me put it another way. You argue that one of the main benefits for her undergoing these sessions was so that she could keep her job. So if we adopt the rationale that you're giving, this is just another spin on Judge Wood's hypothetical, couldn't an employer argue that virtually anything that the employer demands of an employee is a benefit to the employee because the employee needs to do it to keep their job?
Well, I think that's an overstatement. No. In this particular case, the guidance of the two regulations, the general one, but more importantly, the specific one, guides employers in terms of how to handle these particular situations. There was a consequence here, yes, that if she didn't do it, she would not be able to keep her job, or at least probably take a leave of absence, one of the two. We could not bring her back.
Is the record clear on that, that she was actually going to lose her job if she refused the treatment from Dr. Nucci?
It's not clear. Deborah Porter, the Human Resources Director, in stipulated fact 26. But Deborah Porter, the Human Resources Director, testified that based on Dr. Stannard's recommendation, she could not bring Ms. Sehi back to work without requiring this counseling. I'm not sure it went as far as to say she would be fired or what the consequence would be, but clearly she would not be allowed to return to work. Whether that would take the form of outright loss of employment or a leave of absence or something like that, I'm not sure the record answers that question. But if I can go back to I understand Your Honor said that it's not intended to be the all-encompassing regulation, but 785.43 is a very carefully crafted regulation taking into account the multiple considerations in medical treatment time.
But it is... focusing, though, on work injuries, and we have a finding of fact from the district court based on the stipulated facts and everything, but the district court makes it pretty clear that this is not a work-related injury. And so, again, you know, we're moving away from the field of coverage of 785.43.
I disagree with you, Your Honor. I think the department, by limiting it to work-related injuries and conditions, what the Department of Labor is saying is that non-work-related medical attention time is never going to be treated as work time. We're going to create these particular circumstances under which we will treat it, where it is work-related, where it is either on the premises or at the direction of the employer and during normal work hours on regular scheduled work days. The DOL has taken the position that you don't have to pay people for medical attention time except in these circumstances. They've weighed all of the relative interests. They've done that because medical attention, at least inherently, goes to the benefit of the employee, a large benefit, and primarily the benefit. The other critical language in 785.43, it talks about at the direction of the employer. The regulation covers our case. It covers a situation where the employer has directed the employee to receive the medical attention. That tells me, and it should tell, I think, anybody looking at it, that that regulation is intended to cover comprehensively.
Well, it might be, except I just want to say, because your time's running short,
yes.
The introductory statement to 785 says, no inference should be drawn from the fact that a subject or an illustration is omitted. And so you're asking us to make exactly that kind of inference.
No, I'm not saying it's omitted. I'm saying the regulation explicitly addresses the situation.
No, it doesn't. It does not address the situation where at the direction of an employer, in order to keep the job, in order to have a skill set for the job, a person is told, you have to go get this continuing kind of medical care off-site, off-hours? The regulation doesn't talk about that.
It doesn't, but the two important DOL opinion letters do, and they're cited at page 23 and 26 of our appendix. Those two wage hour opinion letters specifically address our circumstance and a non-work-related injury circumstance. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Haggerty.
Good morning, Your Honor. Ryan Haggerty on behalf of Carrie Sehy, the plaintiff, and appellee in this matter. May it please the court. Your Honors, this case is not a case where an individual is attempting to recover for the time spent seeing her own doctor at her own discretion, at a place and a time that was convenient for her, or for a purpose that would primarily benefit her. At its core, this case is about the extent to which the city imposed a restriction on Ms. Sehy's freedom of movement for the purposes of procuring a benefit from her.
Well, I have to tell you, there are aspects of this case, and I don't mean this in a frivolous way, that remind me of the old adage, no good deed goes unpunished. It seems to me that Ms. Sehy had reached a point in her career with the city of Aurora where she really wasn't performing the duties of this 911 dispatcher adequately, and she was told, we'll help you, you know, get back up to par. And they told her how they wanted to help her, you know, this is what we're offering, Dr. Nucci, et cetera, et cetera. But I see this as sort of conceptually different from saying we're going to give you a new and better skill set, whether it's like computers or if you have a job that, you know, requires you, like the police force, you know, to be physically fit in certain ways, you know, sending you off to, you know, some kind of training camp or whatever. Telling her that they'll either in a sense fire her if she can't get up on her own or help her get up to par strikes me as something quite different, and getting up to par could be seen as for her primary benefit.
Your Honor, there's no question that in this case, Ms. Sehy actually benefited from attending the counseling sessions to the extent that they allowed her to keep her job.
What's she doing now, by the way?
She is working for the Northern Trust of Illinois Bank, I think. I'm not too sure.
Uh-huh. And as you stated, these counseling sessions allowed her to keep her job even after her December 2000, you know, issues in the workplace. So I think that fact is not helpful to you.
Well, Your Honor, the reason why I don't think that fact is instructive for the court is because under 785.7, the regulation that the district court relied upon, the correct inquiry is whether these counseling sessions were pursued necessarily and primarily for the benefit of the city. It's not whether Ms. Sehy or the city actually benefited. The question is whether they were pursued for the city's benefit.
But how do we deconstruct that? Because the city, you know, needs to have people in this job, as I was pointing out to Mr. Piskorski. So, you know, not needing to replace a person, keeping a trained employee is valuable to the city. But on the other hand, as far as I know, this was employment at will. Was she under any kind of...
She was working under a collective bargaining agreement, Your Honor.
Okay, so she's under a collective bargaining agreement. And, you know, if you can't do the job, they're entitled to either let you, you know, take disability time if you need to get your health back, whether it's physical or mental health or both. They don't have to take the extra steps that the city took here.
Your Honor, there was never a finding that Ms. Sehy could not perform the minimum requirements of her job. In fact, Dr. Stannard's evaluation clearly reflects that Ms. Sehy was fit for duty. In fact, Dr. Stannard explicitly said that at that point in time, he did not have adequate data to defend a finding of unfit for duty.
No, I mean, I read that, and it's kind of an ambivalent statement in that particular report. And he certainly is at the same time saying that he thinks additional treatment is a good idea.
Correct. The only thing that Dr. Stannard said with respect to Ms. Sehy was that she wasn't well suited for the job of being a dispatcher. Now, the question of whether the city was doing her a favor by not terminating her versus, you know, keeping her employed and imposing a condition of continued employment, I think really there's no question that the city had the authority to terminate her here. What is, although we believe that she, you know, had rights under the collective bargaining agreement, and that there were facts and circumstances present in this case under which an arbitrator might have reinstated her, the city could have terminated her. However, Your Honor, they did not.
Okay, could I ask you this hypothetical really quickly? Suppose somebody is working for the city as a firefighter, and she goes on a skiing vacation, throws her knee out, and needs 6 months of physical therapy to get the knee back into a condition that is suitable for the normal duties of a firefighter. Do you think the city would have to pay for those, you know, the count as hours worked, the hours at physical therapy for the firefighter?
Is this assuming that the employer is requiring the employee to receive treatment?
Well, if there's no it's assuming that there's a fitness requirement to be a firefighter that says you have to be able to run up and down stairs in a certain amount of time or whatever. We can make up a physical requirement. And when you've thrown your knee out, you need physical therapy to get back up to that level of of performance. And I want to know whether those would be counted as hours worked.
I think under the Dade County case cited by the city, that would not be compensable time. And Dade County is distinguishable because in that case, the special response team police officers were held to a particular standard. They had to take two physical fitness exams a year, and they had to pass those exams, and they were instructed by their superiors that they needed to be physically fit for duty. Mm-hmm. And the thing that makes Dade County distinguishable from our case is that in Dade County, the employees were given absolutely no guidance on how to do that. The employer did not dictate the method or the manner in terms of how it was, in terms of how these employees were supposed to pass the physical examinations. They weren't told that they needed to go to a particular gym, that they needed to spend 3 hours of time there, that they had to follow a particular routine. In this case, Ms. Sehi wasn't. There was no standard that she was held to. In this case, there was a severe restriction on her freedom of movement. Here, Your Honor, the city told her that she could only see Dr. Nucci. The city prevented her from seeing her own doctors, who she was already under the care of and who she had a longstanding relationship with. The city
they weren't really preventing her. I just thought they weren't willing to pay for that. I mean, she wanted to spend
they
all week
going
to doctors. She was free still to go.
She was still free to go to her own doctors.
And since we're on the issue of pay, the city picked up 90% of the tab for the therapy, and you know that's one of your strong arguments. I'm just curious whether that was covered under the collective bargaining agreement. Was that part of her health benefit package?
I think it was part
and
of her.
So that's why. And would the city have paid regardless?
No, I think it was part of her group insurance coverage, Your Honor, if I recall right. However, by the city could have told her that she was to pay for that. That the city could have said, look, you know, these counseling sessions are for your benefit, and we're not going to do anything that's going to potentially increase our premiums. And they could have required her to pay for it, but they didn't here, Your Honor. They picked up 90% of the cost.
Like when she had her own therapist, I assume she paid for that out of her insurance benefits, or she paid out of pocket or her own benefits.
She did, and in fact, because the city required her to see Dr. Nucci, she was to a certain extent prevented, and this isn't on the record, but she was prevented to a certain extent from seeing her own therapists at the time. And if I could respond to the city's argument concerning the fact that Ms. Sehi continued to see Dr. Nucci after she resigned from the city, mm-hmm. I think that looks at, you know, the actual benefit that she received. And I think that really is not the real inquiry here. The inquiry here, Your Honor, is whether the sessions were pursued for the city's benefit, not whether she actually received it. It's kind of a hindsight is 2020 retrospective of argument. I think really to respond to well, before I do that, let me say, here there was a severe restraint on her freedom of movement, and the restraint was for the purposes of so the city could procure a benefit from Ms. Sehi. They certainly could have terminated her, however, they did not. And the fact that they did not terminate her, Your Honors, should be taken as evidence that they believed that they stood to gain something by keeping my client employed and by requiring her to attend these sessions as a condition of continued employment. Not only did they avoid the potential expense of an arbitration, they avoided the cost of having to rehire and to train somebody new, and they also avoided the loss of the experience and the dedication that Ms. Sehi brought to the job as a 6-plus-year employee. More pertinently, however, Your Honors, Dr. Stannard's evaluation makes it clear that the purpose of these counseling sessions was to enable her to more effectively perform her job duties as a dispatcher and to enable her to more effectively relate to her coworkers and communicate with her coworkers. I see that my time is up. I ask that the court issue a decision sustaining the district court's judgment in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you very much. How much time? We'll give you a minute just to wrap up.
I'll even try to take less, Your Honor. I close by urging the court to take a look at the two opinion letters that are on point here, and they're at pages 23 and 26 of the appendix. Those are the only Department of Labor opinion letters that deal with our type of situation. And in both cases, they hold the time is not work time. The plaintiffs, both of those were not considered by the district court. And Judge Wood, your hypothetical is very, very close to the opinion letter at page 23.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We appreciate it. The case will be taken under advisement.